Hello, everyone, and welcome to Through the Web podcast. Glad you can join us for this very special occasion, our first
episode
of
the show. So this is what happens when DeGogo doesn't have a script.
Mm-hmm. He cannot talk. Yeah.
But that's a lie, because he can talk. He just
gets nervous, I guess.
So look, first episode, do you want to talk a bit about why you decided to start a podcast despite having such a great following on your YouTube channel?
Well, I think one of the main reasons is the fact that people don't know me very well as a person. So it's essentially a way to get to know my thoughts in a way that's more expressive and free-flowing, and just to have a conversation about different topics that are on the channel or just other things going on in science and tech. I think there's people that want to maybe listen to that. So that's the crux.
Yeah, and I think with Cold Fusion as well, I think you wanted to do a Cold Fusion podcast, but that would be specific to the videos. Mm. I think we kind of went away from it a little bit with the show, which is why I'm here, I guess.
Would you like to introduce yourself, actually?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Tausif. Most of you won't know me because I actually have nothing to do with the Cold Fusion channel, except that I do know DeGogo for a while. I do have my own thing where I produce a lot of content, a lot of media, mostly for the internet, which was actually one of the potential names for the show, but unfortunately it was taken. Mm-hmm. We went through quite a few iterations of the names. Mm-hmm. So for the internet, next in line.
The casual check-in.
And we decided on Through the Web literally 30 seconds before you hit record.
Yeah. Let's hope it sticks.
So why do you want to go in depth about like the topics that you know you're interested in anyway? Mm-hmm. Because you know, one side of the thing you mentioned is you wanted yourself, like people want people to know you better. Mm-hmm. But why the specific topics that you do on Cold Fusion channel anyway, and now you want a separate outlet? Like, do you have a lot to say?
Not necessarily, but I just think it's a good place to start. Like, because, you know, when a video is released, there's often a lot of talk and people kind of like saying like, oh yeah, that's an interesting thing, or like whatnot, and what do you think about this, and what do you think about that? And it's like, well, if I just talked about it, then I'm sure they'll be beneficial to a lot of people.
Right. And with this podcast then, what do you want to, I guess, achieve out of it? Like what would be a cool kind of thing to give to the people? Like what do you want them to leave with once they finish listening to the podcast?
Hopefully some interesting tidbits that they wouldn't have known before. I think that would be the main thing. But I guess just to listen and have a good time, really.
What kind of topics can they expect coming up?
Sorry?
What kind of topics do you think they can expect?
So there'll be some stuff on the Great Resignation, which is a phenomenon going around the world, where essentially people are quitting en masse from their jobs. And there's a few different factors to it, but I think it's world-changing essentially and deserves to be covered. Also, I'm thinking of another topic, the problem with fact-checkers, which, you know, fact-checkers have become – bit of noise going on. Fact-checkers have become like obviously a staple of social media, and obviously there's a place for them. Obviously there's a lot of misinformation and that kind of thing, but it comes to the point where it can go a bit too far. So, for instance, I think it was the New England Journal of Medicine or one of those. They got fact-checked by Facebook or something about something to do with COVID. But the thing was, obviously, no one at Facebook would have the credentials of the people who actually peer-reviewed the papers. And it's like, well, that's kind of backwards. How are they telling us what is the truth when they're nowhere near qualified for it? There's been a few other examples of, people that were fact-checkers that are just part of this, like, company, and they just kind of go through and say yes, no, but it's not. Yeah, so there's a few issues with that, kind of figuring out who gets to be the arbiters of truth, essentially. I think that's a very interesting topic to dive into. Also, AI companions. So if you've ever seen the movie Her,
yes,
you know, it's got the earpiece. That's becoming a reality, essentially. There's an AI companion called Replica, and it's kind of taking off for younger people because people are feeling lonely at the moment. And so basically learns your conversation likes and wants and talks to you and asks you about your day. And Yeah, also in Southeast Asia, there's a few others that are taking off. And I think it's just, it's inevitable.
That's some Black Mirror shit.
It is. There was a Black Mirror episode exactly on this, where, exactly, where she recreated her dead boyfriend. But yeah, I think it's inevitable. When the AI's got to a point where it's just good enough, but you know, in 2 years' time, it'll be 10 times as good.
Because in Japan, they already have anime girlfriends. Like, you can recreate girlfriends from anime,
right,
cartoons.
And, right.
Yeah, you can like legally marry them as well in some places.
Don't know about that. Yeah. Well, it's probably true, but
we need to fact check on that.
But yeah, Jamie,
for those who can't see, you've got Braden on the side, who's basically our Jamie.
So. So yeah, it is a very interesting. It's a very interesting space, I think, to think about, because it's like that idea of humanness. Like, if you have something that basically, for all intents and purposes, can pass the Turing test. That is, if you weren't aware that it was an AI, you could be fooled in thinking that it's a person on the other end of this screen. Like, if it's that good, then, like, it's kind of a gray area. Is this a good thing or is this a bad thing? Like, it keeps people company, but it's not a real person. So also another interesting topic to dive into, I think.
It's quite a diverse range of topics that people can expect from the show. As you can tell, we just wanted to start this. We wanted to get this going and almost like shape it as we go, reiterate.
Yeah, so like full disclaimer, we're not exactly sure how this is going to 100% turn out, but it's just kind of, you know, testing the ropes and seeing what seems good.
Yeah, but I think despite that, we want to be committed to doing at least one show every week, either on, you know, really interesting topics, as Dugogo just mentioned, or on trending topics as well, around tech, media, business, science, and similar to what Cold Fusion already covers. Today, I think this week, you're supposed to release a video called about the
Great Resignation.
By the time people listen to this, it's already out. So if you haven't watched it, make sure to go on the Cold Fusion channel and watch it first. I haven't watched it. Obviously, it's not out, number one. And number two, I think one of the things I want to do is get into a format where I speak to Dugogo first about the topic, or basically find out about the video on the show, almost in real time as we go along. It's almost like you're watching the show video with me. So
yeah.
So tell me about the Great Resignation. You kind of mentioned it in the intro a little bit, but essentially, from what I understand, is a lot of people are deciding to quit. Is it part of the pandemic? Kind of like a offshoot kind of
that was a huge driver in it. Essentially, when the pandemic started and everyone was staying at home and kind of didn't have an opportunity to go out anywhere because most of the world was in lockdown, essentially it gave a lot of people some time to think and reconsider what they wanted, you know, in life. And on a mass scale, a lot of people decided that, you know, I don't like this job. I want to do something else. So that's the long and short of it. But there was a lot of other interesting aspects that came into it. Like, for example, working from home. It turned out that a lot of people thought that it would be a temporary thing, but now it's kind of dragged on a lot longer than most people thought. So remote working now we know is possible. And a lot of employees are actually stating in surveys that they like this arrangement rather than commuting to and from work. And it's really changed up the corporate structure, essentially, because, you know, what's going to happen to all the vacant real estate? And, you know, without people going into cities and CBDs to work, then what's going to happen to all the cafes around that area? And it's a follow-on effect. So no one's really sure if this is going to be a permanent shift or how long it's going to last. But it is interesting because also the balance of power has gone from, traditionally it's always been the employers who have had the power, but now it seems like employees have better bargaining power, especially in lower wage situations like retail or like fast food. So I don't know if you heard, but McDonald's was offering free iPhones for people just to sign up.
Wow.
Some companies offering cash bonuses, Target's offering to pay tuition for people who want to work and study at the same time. So they're really desperate to get people on board. So it's definitely interesting.
And these sounds like good deals as well. Like,
yeah,
you know, getting your tuition paid for, even getting an iPhone and things like that. So that's just pretty sick. With the research, though, does it tell like people are generally happier now that they're getting to work from home? Because I hear quite a bit of mixed kind of reactions on a personal level. Mm-hmm. For first of all, you know, obviously you with your full-time profession, which is you know, the Cold Fusion Studios, where you make stuff for the internet.
Yes.
You know, like deep dev documentaries and things of that sort. You mostly do work from home or from a remote area where you've got teams around the world, right? So when was the last time, if at all, you were in a corporate scenario? Office.
Yeah, so that would have been a long time ago. So that was 2011. Wow. So, yeah.
And ever since then, you haven't been working in... So what's... So I'm assuming the pandemic didn't really affect the way you worked as much.
No. It was just rolled over. Yeah, it was the same deal.
Same deal for you, right. Is there anything that you miss from your...
So the office experience I had, I'm not going to say the company, but it was a large oil and gas company. It was not great, mainly because I was by far the youngest person there. Everyone was, you know, mid-40s to like mid-50s kind of age. So in terms of like relating to people wasn't a thing. It just felt like conversations were fake and forced. And it was a dysfunctional office as well. Like procedures were circular, going around in circles, and everything seemed like you had to talk to another person to get something done. It just wasn't my cup of tea, to put it bluntly. So I don't miss it at all. Right. But then again, I know that's not every office situation. I know I just probably was on the worst end of the scale of things. But for me personally, no, I don't miss it.
Braden, did you ever have to work in an office situation?
I did.
Yeah,
and then, the office situation.
And but now you don't, right?
No.
Did you like it, like the corporate scenario?
No, not really. No, like, I mean, I've freelanced for most of my working life, I guess. So I think I prefer that freedom, but also, yeah, you just got more choices, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think freelancing, if done right, is towards what the future will be, I think. It's, you know, offices... It's questionable how much benefit they have in terms of like actual productivity and that kind of thing. Because obviously working from home, you can do it wrong as well.
Yeah.
But there is a strong argument to be made that that can actually be beneficial as well. So,
Yeah, like for me as well, with my profession, it's I've had to work at a lot of different corporate scenarios. So I have been working on a marketing, well, as a marketer mostly. So for small companies and then for bigger companies and then for startups. And now I work as a consultant where basically over the last 2 years I've been working from home. And I've seen like the corporate, like as you mentioned, like the fake kind of stuff as well. But I've also seen some good stuff as well. So I think most major big companies do feel quite hollow and shallow to me personally. But I think there are plenty of people who actually like that as well. Not the hollow or the shallowness of it, but more so the structure, the routine of having a physical place to go to work that's outside of your home.
And yeah, no, that's a big part of it as well. So like for a while, definitely more so before COVID, I'd go to like co-working spaces and that kind of thing just to separate the work from home.
Exactly.
Sorry, not work from home, but the work life from the home life. Because I think that's quite important as well to actually go somewhere and sit down and this is work time now. You know?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people get energized from presence of others. Like especially when you're in marketing, you have to work with sales teams and sales teams are like some of the most extroverted people you'll see on the planet, right? Most salespeople have to be like that, you know, by nature. So I've seen people like who wouldn't function well at all in a closed, you know, environment where they're just working and tapping away in a computer. Like they need to go out, they need to talk to people. And you can see that like their eyes just light up like when they've, you know, got a deal that they've landed and things of that sort. So I think it's, that's why I was asking about the research as to like, the people who are quitting or who are letting go of that lifestyle, are they happier now? What would it like? Yeah, I think it's very individual as well.
It depends on your situation, I think. Because for me, I find I'm quite, it depends. Like I'd say I'm more so on the introverted side, but when I'm working, I love to be able to just think. Like a lot of the, you know, in terms of what the, if it's the way how I structure a narrative, or even if it's during the editing process, how things would look and everything. Like you need time to really be involved and zoned in on the work. It's so you know, I find it like probably better to not be bothered every 2 seconds by someone coming over your desk. But I'm probably, I don't know, maybe an outlier or something.
Yeah, and I think also if you, for example, you know, if you've got a young family, I think that's where that becomes a lot harder, because then you've got like kids coming in, you know, tugging at your PJs for attention, as opposed to a coworker, who some of them do still tug on their PJs at work, but that's the level of, you know, disturbance you can get from either end. So it is.
Yeah, very very individualized, I think.
Yeah, but for those who are kind of, you know, quitting now, the shift that we're seeing in the industry, are companies kind of like as much as they're putting incentives for people to join and then coming in, but they're also kind of adapting to it by the looks of it. Like I know a friend who's, you know, typically, and he lives in Toronto, typically the company would be, you know, operating within a physical space. He got the job during the pandemic, the early days of the pandemic, and he's hasn't seen a coworker in two years.
Right.
And they have got like weekly, you know, like meetups through Zoom, like where they sometimes will send like a give back to their place for like a monthly meeting. They'll have like a drink in there and they'll all just drink together on a Zoom call or something like that. And also they'll have like Wordle. Like right now they're having like Wordle quiz. Wordle quiz where they're basically just going through, you know, competing against each other,
right,
kind of thing. So they are kind of adapting to that as well.
Yeah.
But I don't know how sustainable that is. Like I would get tired of that lifestyle after a bit, I think.
All right. Yeah. Again, it does depend on the individual. In terms of how sustainable it's going to be, for, you know, just the workforce and for companies and the corporate structure, that remains to be seen. But I think it's not going to go away like overnight. I think that this will be a semi-long-term thing at least, because it's just going to be quite a lot of friction to get everyone back into the offices after, you know, getting used to kind of calling the shots and working at your own, working in your own way, I guess, at home. But also depends on the job that you're doing as well. As you said, salespeople, you really need others to hype you up or to have that interaction. So, it depends on the industry.
And I think just like everything else, it has to be balanced, right? Like the way I see it, I think the best case scenario is that you need to do a hybrid of 2 to 3 days in office or 2 to 3 days at home and maybe one day in office and have like a weekly meeting with the team. I think that physical presence really helps.
Yeah.
Because I've built a few media companies, you know, in Asia, Bangladesh, where I'm originally from. And they're like all the, like we've got people from all around the world, right? Mm-hmm. And it's people I've never seen in my life. And it's been, we've been running the thing for almost 10 years now. And it does feel like at a point like, there's only so much you can get to know a person after a certain bit of just knowing them online.
Yeah.
And you feel that if we were in the same room, like imagine doing this, but, you know, like Braden's at his place. Like I'm sure like there are podcasts that are way more successful and does happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's still something about being physical, you know, physically in here, that energy is still there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying. I think there is something to be said for that, and a balance is probably the best way to do things. But overall, very very interesting in what's going on right now, because it seems like it's such a new thing, but such a big thing. Like people may have heard about the Great Resignation, but it's kind of like, what is that? Like, you know, but it really is. It's changed a lot.
I've heard about the term in like various places, but I will have to look at your video to know a bit more. So obviously we don't want to talk about politics and go in depth about those certain topics. But right now, obviously the biggest topic is, you know, Russian, Ukraine, and there's something we can't really skip over. But especially from a tech or Yeah, mostly from a tech angle. What do you think the implications could be, and even the sanctions that are potentially that could happen as well? What are your overall take on it?
Yeah, from a tech angle, I'm not sure how much there is to say there, unless we want to go really far and say that essentially if this whole Russia-Ukraine thing carries on and the world's kind of looking that way, and then China decides to swoop in on Taiwan. The issue with that would be Taiwan literally controls, like, I think it was in a video I did, I did say the number, but something like 80 to 90% of all semiconductors, like whether it's in your car, your fridge, like, you know, Apple's chips or, you know, the Qualcomm chips or Intel, or not Intel, Intel is one of the only ones that's in the US, but like, you know, AMD, like they're all...
The big ones.
Yeah, they're all like have to do with Taiwan. So that would be... catastrophic. Like if China takes over Taiwan, then say goodbye to almost all electronics, essentially. Like we could still buy them, but we can't trust you know, what's inside the chips.
It looks like crypto's also taking a bit of hit with
I was just gonna say, like, I've been watching the markets very closely over the past 2 days just to see what's happening. You know, so, you know, obviously oil's been flying, wheat had a huge surge as well. But then, you know, like the stock market took a hit until yesterday. But Bitcoin's really just been a proxy for the stock market quite recently. Yes. So when people are fearful, they sell off Bitcoin and stocks. So a few years ago, people were thinking that Bitcoin was going to be the safe haven trade. So essentially the same as gold. So like when people are fearful, they pile into that because it's not, you know, associated with anything like to do with the US dollar or anything. But it's turning out to be the opposite. So I'm not sure if institutional investors have got to Bitcoin, and it's kind of like they're just seeing it as another gamble. So it's a bit disappointing, but that's kind
of it. Does Russia and or Ukraine have a lot of mining in there?
Operations?
Operations for Bitcoin?
I have no idea, but I would not be surprised because China, we could talk about the SWIFT payments as well, because I'm sure a lot of you guys would know that as part of the sanctions, there's been some talk by especially the UK in cutting Russia off from the SWIFT system, which is basically, forget what the acronym stands for, but essentially it's the global banking system. So Russia would be aside from that. So Russia has built a parallel system with China and I think a few other countries. I don't know how operational it is yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if crypto is a part of that as well, because any store of value that is outside the US dollar would be something that is in Russia's interests. So I wouldn't be surprised to have mining operations or a large stockpile of cryptocurrencies in some form.
Just coming off from the Russia-Ukraine stories, it's something I just saw online. It's that Twitter accounts sharing video from Ukraine are being suspended when they're needed the most. This is something we've seen in the past with big tech as well, especially on social media platforms where at, you know, moments of crisis, accounts are either suspended or, you know, like critical information's suppressed, or even like deleted altogether. Obviously, I don't. I've got my own take on it, but what do you think of this?
I hate this. I absolutely hate this. I think it's kind of in a large simplistic view, it's kind of like everyone is a baby that cannot think for themselves, and we need like some overarching body to tell little toddler Timmy what to think and what he can and cannot view. Obviously, it's a two-pronged issue. There's a lot of disinformation out there, but when you go too gung-ho in the opposite direction, then you're stopping quite valuable information that, you know, at first may seem a bit outlandish, but then later on we may find it to be true. But it's like if people knew about this on the onset, things could have been different. And just imagine if we had this kind of thing happen, you know, back in, you know, the 80s or the 70s or the 60s, like, you know, the Vietnam War or whatever. Well, I guess that was a lie to get into. But, you know, just how many historical things could have gone a different way because information was censored. And, you know, you think back to Tiananmen Square in China. When that happened, no one in China knew about it. And till this day, there's some people who don't know about what happened then because it was all censored. And it's sad to kind of think that in a way, maybe not exactly the same way, but in a small way, like it's something similar that's going on. So I think Twitter deleting, I think in the article they were saying that these guys were actually trying to debunk some fake footage and they got removed for that. And Twitter said it was an error. But I think, you know, maybe just a little bit more time is needed to carefully sort through something that's so pivotal right now.
Yeah, I personally side a little bit towards with the big tech in the sense that I give them the benefit of the doubt that I don't think it's done intentionally. I think these are way too big operations to, I mean, obviously there are, you know, things that happen under the table, but to monitor such a large amount of, you know, like a volume of data and information and content that takes place every day, a lot of it is done automatically. So I think, you know, especially with violent imagery, with certain political information, I think the algorithm kind of picks it up as something that's you know, deemed at violence. And I think that's where things get removed, right? So I think the main point of view is that I don't think it's done intentionally. If it is, obviously,
I don't think it's done.
Yeah, so I think obviously they need to do better. They can get better, but I think the outrage shouldn't be at. I think this misrepresents the outrage on the big tech that they're doing this in a way to politically sway a narrative. In most cases, I think we've seen this with even as recent as in Israel, Palestine, and a few other places as well, where people were just simply sharing footage from their local like situation, and because it's violent, it's just being taken off. I don't know what's a way out of this, because
shouldn't there be? Well, I guess it's an issue. Like, you know, are they a publisher or are they a platform? Like, because in media, like if something's violent but it's like integral to a story, then you kind of leave it. Like
I think that's where the live kind of reactions is. And the thing is, there are so many people who want to actually cause more harm. Like I've seen in a lot of, you know, real time cases where people are just simply trying to change the narrative, you know, just by putting up fake information as well. So even if it's, you know, like one thing's happening, they're intentionally showcasing the other side of it. Just so it's such a difficult thing. Yeah. So sometimes even living it for people to intake whatever is as is based on what people with ill intentions are posting.
Yeah. And I guess that's the hard thing, because like already in the Ukraine situation, it's happened. There's been people that are posting like planes flying over in formation, but that was actually a parade. Like
Exactly.
It had nothing to do with.
Exactly.
You know, so it's happening, but.
And how do you tackle that as big tech, right? And
yeah.
I know we will talk about Spotify in a future episode soon, but I was reading up this I think it's an anecdote, really. But in a meeting within the Spotify headquarters, it was whoever it was, they displayed like this message of like within a podcast. Apparently, there's this very anti-police statements, okay. Right? They played it to a room of people. I think they're all Spotify employees. And then asked them the question, like, do you think such sentiments of anti-police should be there on Spotify, right? Especially in a podcast setting where people are coming to listen to it. And all of them said, no, like, this is clearly anti-police statement. Like, it's promoting violence and everything. And then they revealed it's actually the lyrics to Fuck the Police by NWA, right? Mm. So for an algorithm to judge that, for example, and no one said, but if it's Fuck the Police, then it's okay, right? Mm. By, you know, when it's the song.
Where's the line, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I think, and then the test group were swaying towards, oh, no, then it should stay, right?
Right, yeah.
So it's also, I think we can get to a point where it can tell that, okay, it's a song. It's like, it's just setting up the context. It's still so far away for these algorithms. Mm-hmm. I think if they want, they can do it.
Mm.
Because you know, tech's so smart these days. Mm-hmm. But
I think AI, in terms of just general, like, here's something good or bad, you tell us. Like, I think it's going to be quite a while until it gets it, like, you know, 80 or 90% right. Mm. There's been some things, for example, there was a picture of a cat, a kitten, that was blurred out on Twitter because it was like violent. Yeah. The AI thought it was violent. Yeah. So it's kind of like, it was just sitting there. The cat was so it was kind of like, you know.
Just on that, I think there was this another news topic about YouTube's captions are just, the AI can't transcribe it properly on kids' videos. So the captions, so the AI that transcribes spoken dialogue on the platform's standard version can render corn as porn, beach as bitch, and brave as rape. And they've been doing that over, you know, children, videos for children as well.
So literally the captions of these
like say we post of this video.
No, but like, you know, but it's in YouTube Kids.
And it is on YouTube Kids.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well then, it's kind of dumb because, like, you know, why, even if the AI is getting it wrong, why can't they just have like first letter and then asterisks if it is getting it wrong all the time or whatever? Mm. Like, it shouldn't be that hard to implement.
That's what I mean. I think they're like simple things that almost these big tech don't account for unless it actually happens. You know what I mean? So now that this happened, they will be like, oh, let's just do that. Like, let's just get those bad words.
But I don't know. Something's weird with YouTube. I got a couple of bones to pick, but one of them is like the spam bots. They're going crazy. They're like breeding and talking to each other. I don't know.
Have you seen those accounts? Those one letter accounts that are verified?
Like No.
You haven't seen them. Nah. So it's like literally an account that'll be just D.
Okay.
Right, and it'll have a verified check,
yeah.
And on the profile picture, it'll just have a black circle, okay, almost like that, and just have a D in there.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it'll leave a comment that's relevant to the video. So, for example, they could very well leave a comment under this video and say that, oh, I love Dagogo's videos on Cold Fusion. I've been following him for 10 years, right?
Yeah.
And then you click on the thing, and there'll just be one video and be like, found my video from a comment. And it'll be like 2 million views on that video. And then what you'll start noticing is that it's the same channel or similar channels leaving very contextual comments on other YouTube videos that are popular.
Yeah.
So I would have seen this on Bangla videos as well. So, you know, my native language.
Yeah.
Leaving Bangla comments that are contextual.
Yeah.
So it's not even like spammy random.
Yeah, so there's an AI that's working.
I've been trying to figure it out, like what's happening. One theory is that they're buying... they're paying like popular channels. So like that's only got like maybe 20-30K, you know, subscribers. They're just buying it off and then using those as ways to.
But you said you clicked on the channel, it had a video with a million views or something.
Did you say that?
So what would be the video?
Oh, this is one video just talking about like, almost like, hey, you probably saw me in five different channels.
Okay. Right.
What is this all about? And then you want to click on it because you want to find out. And it's basically this random guy talking that, hey, this used to be a Minecraft channel or a Roblox channel, but I've stopped making it. But that doesn't make any sense. So there's like other YouTube channels trying to, but this weird stuff like that's happening, right? Like you have no idea what's happening.
Yeah. I can understand how it's leaving contextual comments that kind of make sense. Like, you know, an AI like GPT-3 can already do something like that. But that sucks, but that's not kind of what I'm talking about. I'm talking about those spam ones that are like, you know, Julie,
like with the links and
stuff. Yeah, like follow me at WhatsApp, blah, blah, blah. And it's like imitating the profile picture of the whatever.
Right.
And it's kind of like, you know, they're taking over the comment section. It's like you delete them, hide them from the channel and they come back straight away. And then YouTube's not doing anything about it. And then, you know, Linus Tech Tips, the YouTube channel, he featured another YouTuber who essentially fixed it himself. He made a program that goes and clears it all out. And then like when he shared it on Twitter, everyone's like, how is YouTube like a multi-billion dollar subsidiary of Google, one of the biggest companies in the world, or Alphabet, not able to figure this out? But then this guy just by himself managed to do it and it works.
But I think a lot of it is also because, again, I tend to kind of side towards big tech a little bit. Because I think it's also because there aren't enough creators talking about it
gets their attention. Wrong. Like on Twitter, like you can at YouTube and then
saying like in the context of like the whole world, like the amount of channels and the regions that they have to tackle.
Every YouTuber is talking about this, every single one. They've all made separate videos saying, if you see this in my comment section, don't reply. Like I've seen that.
And there's been like no response. Because YouTube's, of all the big tech. I would say the YouTube's the one who kind of tries to side with the creators a lot more than usual.
Yeah.
And they haven't responded to that at all?
No. It's weird. So that's
why. Because usually they, even on Twitter, when they're like being tagged by, you know, big creators, yeah, they usually respond back, say, hey, look, we acknowledge it at the very
end. Yeah. So I don't know what's going on with that. It just seems like a big gap that's not being filled. And the second bone I have to pick with YouTube is their search.
Got a lot of bones.
Yeah. No, but I don't know what's happened, but their search, like for Google, like that they made the search engine, like, yeah, you know, that they made one of the best search engines. It's accurate. Lately anyway. Yeah. But yeah, so on YouTube now it's like you get three relevant results and then the rest are like for you and recommended and whatnot. And I think they're doing that because they want to basically keep you but like instead of searching, like it discourages you from searching, so you'll just like go to the sidebar and kind of just like watch, because they know that algorithmically and statistically you're longer to stay on than searching for something different. And what that's just my opinion, but there's no other reason why search should be completely demolished. Because I remember like a year ago you could search something, you could find like obscure stuff and it was very accurate, but now it's all just like irrelevant after the first three results.
I think they're trying new things as well, because right now I've been seeing a lot of really old videos being recommended to me,
right,
like from 13 years ago, 10 years ago, and not even like stuff that from channels that I would have seen.
But is it the ones that have like a sentence as a title?
Oh,
like when you do blah 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 or something like
No. It could be simple as like, you know, a cover by like, you know, like Eminem's Lose Yourself cover, like right after the Super Bowl thing. So I obviously watch Super Bowl on YouTube.
Yeah.
The halftime show. And I think right after that, there was like a 13-year-old cover.
Right.
By this random person.
Yeah.
Which is not even like millions of views, like a semi-popular, like, you know, like 100,000 or something.
Yeah.
So, and I've been seeing similar stuff on. So I think they're trying different things, but the search thing, it doesn't make sense either. And it's like...
And I like Googled this on Reddit because I was getting really annoyed. Because like what I like to do, sometimes I like to find like obscure stuff on YouTube, because it's like when you find that stuff, it's like really cool. It's like, oh, no one knows about this. It's crazy. Yeah. But I can't do that anymore because it's like the search is broken. So I went on Reddit and everyone's complaining about the same thing. It's like recently in the last year, search has just gone to crap and no one knows why. So yeah, I don't know. Some odd stuff going on with YouTube. But, you know, overall, like you can't complain too much. They're doing...
I think when you compare YouTube to Facebook to Twitter to Instagram under Facebook anyway, but TikTok, YouTube I think wins for creators like for 9 out of 10 times, 10 out of 10 times actually, because recently there's a video about TikTok. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh yeah, Hank Green.
Yeah, such a good video. Yeah. And so eye opening as well to see.
Like you get millions of views and get like $20.
Yeah, like he's getting more popular, but his revenue is going lower because they work from
a static pool, which is like crazy.
And in comparison, YouTube paid out $10 billion to creators.
Mm.
That is incredible. Like, literally half or close to half of what they earn. So yeah, I think we're saying this stuff so that YouTube can push our video to more people.
Come on,
algorithm. Like we're trying to help you out here.
Very interesting. I don't know how we got from Ukraine to
YouTube. We'll have to find out. But I think that almost signals towards the end of the of the first episode.
Yeah, I think it does. And, you know, I hope you guys enjoyed it.
I think we will do this every week. We will try and have some community engagement questions and things of that sort as well.
Eventually.
But for now, we hope you enjoyed the first episode, and we'll see you for the next one.
All right. Cheers.
You're going to keep that? Are you going to keep that finger point thing?